Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Truth on the Tracks. This is being recorded February 25th, 2013, pre-recorded a little bit further in advance as usual. I'm glad everybody's with us tonight. We've been off the air for quite some time, for going on just about a month. So we had some technical difficulties and nature itself did intervene at some point, but that's neither here nor there. We are back on the air and hope to be back on the air regularly from here on out, if nothing else comes up. Now, for any of the new listeners, I just want to point out that Truth on the Tracks here at UCY.TV is broadcast every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you want to access the show's personal page, you can just go to UCY.TV/TT for Truth on the Tracks. Now, for those of you who are joining us for the first time and are not familiar with me, again, my name is Brandon Turberville. I'm also a staff writer for ActivistPost.com, and you can follow my work there on the website as it comes out there on the homepage. You can also click on the Contributors tab and find my name, where it'll have a list of some of my more recent articles. Click on my name, and you can get to my article archive. If you are just interested in following my work specifically, then go to brandonturberville.blogspot.com. That's available as well. It's just my backup blog where I repost all of my articles, all of the archive versions of this show, Truth on the Tracks, and all of the radio interviews that I do, all the other relevant information there. I'm also the author of four books, which you can find at falseflagpublications.blogspot.com. You can find them there with easy access buttons to find the books and purchase them. I like to go ahead and get all the panhandling out of the way at the beginning of the show so I don't have to worry about doing it later on. Now, just to point out some other things, what I try to do with the show here is to not only focus on some of the news that I've been paying attention to recently, but also to act as sort of a hub for other activists. And being based in South Carolina, we could use all of the activists and all of the hubs that we can get here. We're sort of activist-depleted, researcher-depleted in this area, but it is growing. We also try to connect people with other activists and other operations in other parts of the country, other parts of the state, other parts of the world, and work together in that sense. So just before we get to our guest tonight, I want to bring up an article, because we also deal with solutions, because that's what it's about. Instead of just parroting the problem all the time, it's important to actually have solutions and work towards solutions. I want to point out my article, The Case for the 1% Wall Street Sales Tax. That's up at Activist Post right now. If it's not on the homepage, you can always Google it with The Case for the 1% Wall Street Sales Tax, Brandon Turberville, Activist Post, and it should come up easily. You should click on it and check it out. It's a very detailed argument for the 1% Wall Street sales tax as a solution to the budget deficit, as a solution for the social safety net crisis here in the United States. So go check that out. Also go check out Palmetto Gun Rights and United Front Against Austerity for organizations that are actively pursuing solutions and answers to the problems that we're facing right now. But we'll get into that probably next week. But I have a great guest with me tonight. I was a guest on his show some time ago, right before we signed off for a little under a month on this show. But we have Vinnie Eastwood with us tonight. And Vinnie, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Brandon. It's a very nice pleasure and various other nice adjectives to be here.
Yeah, so for those of my listeners who might not be familiar with you, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do and where they can find you?
Well, you know, that's actually what I normally do, ask the guests on my radio show, because I choose not to do a whole lot of research or background checks or things like that before I bring them on. So really quickly and easily, tell us who you are and what it is you do. And so, yeah, therefore, I don't have to do any research because I find out. okay, well, as you can tell already, I'm not an American. I'm a New Zealander. and I have a talk radio show called the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, as in Clint Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And I'm live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, hopefully expanding to a little bit more extravagant hours soon enough, if that's at all possible. And in terms of relationships, you're familiar with the terminology of guilt by association. So I'm going to just guiltify myself now. I have interviewed G. Edward Griffin. I have interviewed David Icke. I have interviewed a number of the top activists, George Norrie, Jordan Maxwell, so on and so forth. Basically, I'm the only New Zealander in history to have ever done this kind of thing, namely have an American-based talk radio show, which I was very kindly enough to be given by Danny Romero at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, who is Alex Jones' former producer. Now, I also run Guerrilla Media. I'm the founder of it, and we have recently relaunched it as the Real Guerrilla Media, so it's RealGuerrillaMedia.com. My partner there, Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism, and her lovely husband, David, have helped me to set up that website, and we are now recruiting activists and cheerleaders of truth like crazy. And Brandon, I believe you're one of those people. And what else do I do? Oh, yes, I'm also a filmmaker, so I expose scumbaggery with a camera, go out and ambush politicians and other various and varying slime, and try to ask them the tough questions that nobody else will. And in terms of the radio show, the style in which I do it is more or less a happy-go-lucky. Like, let's say if, what's his name? If David Letterman's jokes were actually funny and he actually talked about anything of relevance to humanity, it'd be very similar to my show, except we don't have a house band. That sucks.
Well, so, maybe when you expand, you can get the house band operating.
I was thinking about getting an artificial gap put in my teeth too, you know.
That always helps.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, you mentioned that you were not an American. Being an American, Vinny, I'm a little concerned. I didn't realize that there were other countries outside of the United States. Is this true, what you're telling me?
Apparently. Yeah, well, I see, and again, this is another reason for the uniquity of my show, is it's very rare to hear American talk radio when it's not an American hosting it, and you will often get people from other countries and things of that nature coming on to comment about different things here, that and the other, but being relatively unfamiliar with the rest of the world, as in general Americans very much are, it is a unique opportunity as well to hear an outsider's perspective on what's going on inside the United States. And my producer, who's a third-generation native Californian, has said on numerous occasions that I know more about America than the vast majority of Americans do, which is a very scary thing to behold, yet quite obvious, really, because anybody who's got two brain cells to rub together and isn't sucking down quarter pounder cheeseburgers from McDonald's and the old fashioned non biodegradable styrofoam containers probably doesn't know an awful lot about the country in which they live, nor do they know a hell of a lot about the world which their country rules. and we've all seen things by Jay Leno and others, whereby even simple, obvious questions, such as who's the current president of the United States, some Americans can't answer the question. And it's terrifying, really, to behold as an intelligent American like yourself, as I'm sure it is for a non-American like myself. And what I've also wanted to do, sort of embody, is that America's very much the last bastion that the New World Order wants to take down. They want to take their guns. They want to destroy their economy. They want to take away the object of liberty and what have you. So if America falls, you know, what next? We're all screwed, is my opinion. And also, that's the moral support of knowing that, hey, Americans aren't alone in this fight. There's people from all over the world who do not want America to fail, who do not want the people to go to FEMA camps, who do not want the water to be fluoridated in major U.S. cities, who do not want it to be chemtrailed, who do not want GMO crops to take over the farmland of American family farmers. And so it is a reiteration that you're not alone in this fight, and there are people out there who are supportive and willing to help by any means necessary.
Right, and one of the things that I find interesting about the, you know, American foreign policy and so many, and I jumped to this because it's the most obvious, because it affects other countries in a more obvious fashion, is the foreign policy that so many other countries across the world are forced to pay attention to, because many of them are the recipients of our foreign policy, whether it's whether we're, you know, delivering food or bombs, usually bombs, or sometimes in the same container, just to mix it up a bit. But here in the United States, with the exception of a few people, a relative minority, foreign policy is not given as much attention as you might think. Well, you would understand this, but many people across the world wouldn't. It's very much like, to the vast majority of people, it's very much like watching a movie, right? Because that's what we do. We sit around and watch TV all the time, and we can't distinguish fact from fiction anymore. But you know, for those of us, for those of the listeners who don't encounter, you know, a perspective that's outside of the United States, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the average New Zealander can gather about the United States, whether it's foreign policy or anything else, really. What's the outlook of the average New Zealander toward the United States?
Much like the outlook of the average American, meaning they know very little, if anything. All right? You've heard of the old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Well, right. If you go from the United States to New Zealand, there's only one real difference that you'll notice, and that's the accent. Everything else is the same. We've got corrupt politicians, fluoridated water, chemtrails, and a public that denies all three.
Yeah, and what's funny is that every nation on earth has, you know, the corrupt politicians. You can even go back to some of the ancient writings, like Sumer, and the writer was complaining about the corrupt politicians and the massive bureaucracies that actually outnumbered many of the. Many of the private dwellings and so forth in Sumer, right? So the more things change, the more they do stay the same. No doubt about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to New Zealanders know a lot more about America than the average American does, which is ironic, really. They don't even freaking live there. But also what I've noticed is the communists among New Zealanders, and I'll use that word operatively, hate Americans, all right? They don't differentiate, I don't think, between American policy, which is set by the global elite and scumbaggery agents within our society, and Americans themselves, which I can't sympathise with, because I've met a lot of Americans within my time, and some of them are really freaking dumb. Like, the dumbest American that I've ever met is far, far dumber than the dumbest New Zealander that I've ever met, right? Like it's gotten that bad, the deliberate dumbing down of America. And my strict sort of policy or concern upon this really kind of reflects in the way that I choose to foster and help out my American brethren, as it were, because I don't, it's kind of hard to explain that we're all living in a global system and nothing is really different from country to country. There's only the appearance of a difference. Do you sort of know what I mean, Brandon?
Yeah, it's definitely a global a global agenda here. I mean, it's even at some of the countries that have a much, much different culture than the United States and New Zealand than even some of the European cultures. You can go to Asia, South America, all that. It's still the same agenda. It might take a slightly different form, but it's still the same thing happening. Whether it's genetically modified food, whether it's the police state, whether it's war in general, it's happening all over the world, and whether we like it or not, we're interconnected in that way.
Yeah, I do feel it's like that, and my great fear is that. Well, here's another interesting thing. You know, the reason why New Zealand's so much like America is because all of our television, well, almost all of it, is American TV, and all the fast food companies are American fast food companies. All the list just goes on and on and on. I mean, everything's Americanized to a large degree in this country. So it's of no surprise to me that New Zealand's remarkably similar in the way that it goes about things. It's just, labels change or whatever. Like, you've got the Republican Party and their color is red, right? Well, we've got the National Party and the color is blue. You've got the Democrat Party and the color is blue. We've got the Labor Party and the color is red. Now, what's interesting about that red and blue spectrum is that that's infrared and ultraviolet, which is the entire spectrum of visible light. Isn't that interesting? And apparently it's a Freemason symbol thingy that they control both the spectrums or whatever. But it's just, you can't deny these things that are going on around you. And it matters not which country you're in, because it's just the such and such branch of the New World Order now. You know, it doesn't make a frickin' difference as far as I'm concerned. It's all scumbags and scumbaggery.
Yeah, and it's also like going from city to city. You can, here you can go from one major city to the next, and there will be slight differences. But you still, the buildings look the same, largely, unless there's still some of the ones standing from the 1800s, early 1900s, which were largely built by, Freemasons and so forth. But the buildings look the same. They're all big square boxes. The houses are all pushed off into housing developments. And you can eat at McDonald's, Wendy's, Bojangles, or Subway. And that's pretty much your options. And Burger King, of course, if you like horse meat. But, those are your options, and it looks the same. You know where you can go in each city. You can go back and forth, and it you don't really experience anything different. That's what the world is turning to. You mentioned that you guys have got all the fast food chains there in New Zealand. That's just great. You can fly from the United States all the way to the other side of the world and still eat crap that lasts for a year without actually deteriorating in any real sense.
Yeah.
But Go ahead.
It's paradise.
Well, I'm glad we could export something that's worthwhile for the rest of the world.
When was the last time America did that? Actually you got an American product that was American made that didn't suck balls?
It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't have anything. I don't have anything. I mean, even the Mac computers and stuff that I've got in here, sure, they're designed in America, but they're made in China. Nothing's made in America anymore.
Yeah, well, you get the the Foxconn factories that are so awful that they have to put up nets to keep the skilled workers from jumping out of the building and killing themselves.
Well, I thought that was just to do with Chinese trapeze artist training, but yes.
Well, it could be. I'm sure that you should have told that to the Chinese embassy. They would have put that out as a press release.
No doubt.
Yeah, but I guess we have our exports of the police state. I mean, surely you would not discount our our war machine, right? I mean, we're a great exporter of that. Democracy, that's our number one export.
Oh,
we
yeah.
Export democracy.
So, I mean, they're not. America's not using it anymore, so they decided to give it to other people.
That's the truth.
You know, why don't they give us their constitution as well? They don't seem to have had any use for that for a while.
No, I think they keep shreds of it around for each president as toilet paper every time it rolls they roll around.
Yeah, it's just a piece of paper, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that's all it is. Don't have any illusions about it.
You know, at one point, there were people who were manufacturing toilet paper with the Constitution printed on it as a political gag. But well, you know, I think a lot of people started taking it the wrong way. So, as you can see from the results of what we have over here now.
Yeah, I find that incredibly ironic. You know, how could you think that they're taking it the wrong way? I mean, I don't know. It just scares the living bejesus out of me, really. I mean, here we have it, a country that used to be the best country in the world. Now that they're only number one in three things: incarcerating their own people, bombing other people's people, and the gap between rich and poor. That's the number one things that America's good for. Education's like 57th. Inventiveness and entrepreneurship is like 108th or something like that. Everything that once made America great is gone, dead, dusted. Right, and it needs some sort of a revitalization. And sure enough, this exact same process is happening to every single other country in the world. You know, make no frickin' mistake. You have a look at New Zealand. You know, we've been shutting down our manufacturing like there's no fracking tomorrow. Like, we don't even have tool makers in this country anymore. You know, you hear that? A couple of years back, the very last tool making apprenticeship and warehouse and things like that shut down. Now the only thing you can buy is a manufactured cheap as chips Chinese hammer that breaks the second or third fifth time you use it, you know, that kind of thing. I remember a friend of mine I was staying at his house, you know, taking care of it for him, and I had to rake up these twigs, and got the landlord to bring around a brand new rake, and it snapped in half literally the first time that I used it. It was just freaking believable. You know, the best place to get tools and things of that nature nowadays is from garage sales. You know, the older and the rustier, the better. They'll actually last a hell of a lot longer and go under a lot more stress and strain than any of the stuff that you'll buy new off the shelves. And, you know, I'm sure Walmart's incredibly happy about all of this kind of phenomenon, aren't they? It's just the whole thing is just out of control, don't you? Don't you think there is nothing good in our society anymore that continues to be encouraged? Everything that's good gets destroyed. And destroyed in quick succession in order to facilitate something more for people who are just complete and total scumbag, trash, filth that run the fracking show. It's terrifying to me that people don't know the difference between quality and crap. And I think that's why they think that they're a quality people when they're really just full of crap.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's gotten to the point now that you need tools to fix the tools that you buy. And I think that one of the things that bothers me more than anything else is not necessarily that we're up against a group of people who have no conscience. I mean, that's bad enough. What bothers me more than anything else is that you can't get anyone else, well, you can't get the vast majority of people to recognize not just the fact that cartel exists, that this whole New World Order system exists, but you can't even make them recognize that there's a problem in general. To give you an example, I remember when I was a kid that people would complain at the gas pumps that, you know, the gas prices are too high. You know, one day they're going to go over a dollar. They're going to go over a dollar one day. People are ripping us off. People would fuss and complain. You'd hear it all over. Gas prices today were $3.57. You can go fill up your car for $65, right? And if you're lucky enough to have a job, if you're lucky enough to fill up your car. At the pump, you can try to get an argument, try to get someone upset. You can try to provoke them. You can't do it. They don't even get upset anymore. Even the ones that remember when there was something slightly different, and this is just a small issue, but it's indicative of the whole situation. Because, again, someone who filled up their car at 357 per gallon, that the answer is, oh, well, what can you do? You know, can't do anything about it. Well, the reason you can't do anything about it is because you're laying around saying you can't do anything about it. And I think that's
precisely right. Precisely. Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, name me a single revolution in history where the masses have actually gotten involved.
Yeah, you can't.
They don't freaking exist. Every time that something good or something bad has happened through history, it's been done by a very small amount of people within that society, and the rest of them just go along with it. That's the lesson of history. Most people will just go along with whatever shepherd is leading them, regardless of whether or not they believe that shepherd is leading them into a slaughterhouse or onto greener pastures. The masses don't matter, in my opinion. They've never mattered. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that I can supply for this. For example, there is a YouTube video with 1.3 billion hits called Gangnam Style. Okay? Which is about dressing fancy and dancing silly. And you have a look at a documentary of any kind that is exposing the truth about anything. You know, you'd be lucky if there's a couple of million hits on it. The majority of people are asleep. They won't wake up. And there's no point trying to wake them up. The point is to activate those who can, all right? There's only a very small minority that you need. I think in the United States Revolution, there were about 3% that fought in the revolution, managed to create the alleged greatest country on earth. You know, and it was going pretty good for a while until the bankers took over again. And then you have a look at, say, what other things can I look to here? Oh, I don't know where I'm going with this. But the fact is, you know, it's circular reasoning because it's circular reasoning. Majority of people don't frickin' matter. And what really matters, though, is usually just one person, one guy who stands up and just goes, no, frack you! And then a whole bunch of people just get up and follow him. That's the only time when the masses actually matter, is when they're not thinking for themselves and following somebody who is.
That's true, too. And it also is related to the fact that, you know, you have so many activists that end up beating their head up against the wall because they're determined to, you know, they've got this one person that's asleep, and they're determined to wake this person up, and they are determined that they will be the ones to do it. And some people, unfortunately, just aren't capable of waking up. Sometimes you just have to walk away, and generally speaking, this seems to be the case for everybody. It's the people that you want to wake up the most that don't want to wake up the most, or at least it seems like they're the most incapable of doing so. So at some point, you just have to realize that you might have to just walk away. Doesn't mean that person will never wake up, because you know, there's been times when I've argued with people for years, and they never paid me any attention, thought I was a crazy conspiracy theorist, and then somebody out of the blue says something that just lifts the veil. You know, somebody, you plant the seed and somebody else comes along and waters it. But at some point, you see people that try to wake someone else up, and they get into an argument, this long drawn out ordeal. They fight. You lose friendships. You lose relationships. And at some point, you have to realize that you're going to need all your friends, all the friends that you can get. As we are starting to see, there's going to come a time when you're not going to want to be as alienated as you might be. So you have to kind of realize that not everybody, as you said, is going to wake up. And we might just have to move on to somebody who is ready to wake up.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I learned this lesson very poignantly when I was a telemarketer, whereby you start a conversation with somebody and you'll work out if you're a good telemarketer very quickly whether or not this person is actually willing to listen, is actually willing to sell, is actually willing to go the distance or whatever, so you can make some money off them. And I found this phenomenon was very much paralleled by telling people the truth. There's a lot of people who just aren't willing to listen. They aren't willing to buy this product, even though it's good for them, that kind of thing. Not that I'm saying that the truth is a product, although there have been many attempts, successful attempts indeed, to commoditize the truth. I consider myself a great commoditizer of the truth because I have managed to have all my bills paid. And here's the other point, not just having your bills paid, but having those bills that turn up unexpectedly at surprising times paid as well. Okay. Due to the donations and subscriptions and sales of products off the website and things like that. But it's taken me 6 years just to get to that point where I can simply survive without absolute constant fear of the threat of starvation and being kicked out of my house because I can't pay the rent. Okay. And you know, this reminds me of Brandon. I also filmed dance parties back in the day, you know, for some extra cash on the side. And I hadn't filmed one for over a year until a friend of mine, Daryl, who's a Rosicrucian, he wanted me to come and film a dance party gig that he's doing called Bass in the Park. And this chick saw me walking around, you know, with my flashy cameras and my shoulder mount and all this kind of stuff with the GoPro and wireless mics and the whole deal. You know, I'm pretty well tech savvy because you have to be if you want to expose scumbaggery by yourself because the mainstream media won't give you a frickin' shot. And she asked me, so how did you do this? How did you get into it? I go, well, you have to do a hell of a lot of filming and a hell of a lot of editing for nothing. You have to live for 6 years in abject poverty where you can't even so much as buy yourself a cup of coffee. You have to have a partner that you can mooch off for that extended period of time. You have to know the organizer for the gig and know that he has no choice. Because nobody else will do that kind of a gig for $75, you know. And that's basically it. You tell people what they actually really have to do in order to get where you are, and they will say, you know what, it's not worth it. You know, and it's just like, you know what, you're right. It ain't worth it. It ain't worth it if you want to have just an easy going life and existence where you don't really have to worry or stress or be under fire or under attack or anything like that. It's not worth it if that's what you want to do in life. But if you don't care, that's the consequence. If you just don't care that you'll get set up, that you'll live a really painful existence, that scumbags will attempt to demonize you at every available opportunity and this kind of thing, if you don't really care about that, there is nothing that can stop you. You know, you'll actually achieve something. If you want to do nothing with your life, there's nothing that'll stop you from doing that either. It's just a simple choice, and most people choose to do nothing.
Well, what do you think, I'd like your opinion on this, what do you think makes the difference? Why do some people, two-part question, what do you think some people are capable of waking up and going down the rabbit hole and other people don't seem to be? And part B to this question is why do you think some of the people who wake up are capable of doing nothing, essentially just going back to sleep, going back to watch television, play video games all day, while other people are determined to move forward, to pursue any number of activist, you know, strategies or opportunities? What do you think makes the difference in those people?
You ever been arrested, Brandon?
No.
You ever been living in abject poverty or something like that and had to basically survive off the wind and the trees?
Oh, yes.
Okay. You ever experienced real hardcore suffering?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You ever have parents that criticize the government or other corrupt institutions in your life?
Somewhat, yeah.
Ever had friends do the same thing? It's a combination of those factors. You need to have a shockingly large amount of trauma. You need to have, it's either one or all or a bit, like, that's what I've really kind of broken it down to, is it's trauma, really. Trauma is the thing that actually wakes you up. It isn't information. You need to feel that the world is wrong, and you need to know how it feels and just how wrong it feels before you will actually have any empathy for the people out there waving the banners and what have you that actually want to change things. Do you see what I'm saying, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
All right, and that's what it takes. You need to frickin' suffer. And you need to suffer hard in order to accomplish anything in this movement. Because otherwise, where the heck would your motivation come from?
Well, it's true. It's true. And there are a lot of people, of course, a lot of different backgrounds, but that is certainly something to take into account. That's why a lot of times it's easier to wake people up. Well, a lot of times, no.
Can I stop you there? Because this term, waking people up, I don't even think that's possible. You know? Like, When I think about waking up, it seems about disillusionment. Okay, so you know you lose your current grip on reality, and you go, hey, you know, hold on, that's not true. I'm going to find out what is true. And for me, it was listening to talk radio and watching documentaries. I think I must have watched offhand 160 documentaries inside of 6 months or something. So I had a geometric increase in my knowledge of the world. And that's what woke me up. And nobody forced me to do that. So to say that I could wake somebody else up or anybody can do that, I don't think is actually real in terms of it. Just like, you know, we need to wake up the masses. The masses don't make a difference. Just like trying to wake people up is not actually possible. People have to wake themselves up. And, you know, it's like you said, planting seeds. That's really what matters here. Because I think I might have heard 9/11 was an inside job talk when I was a teenager, just leaving school and about to go to university from a mentor of mine. I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Then I went to university and a flatmate of mine showed me a documentary called The Truth and Lies of 9/11 by Michael Rupert. And I was like, And then I started listening to Bill Hicks and how he was talking about the bullies of the world and how the United States gives people weapons and then invades them. I was like, But it was only once I got arrested and saw the real iron fist of the state brought down upon me for something that never hurt or killed anybody ever in history, you know, selling a bit of weed. And who the hell doesn't do that at university? And to be going to jail for up to 8 years for a first offense for the possession of 13 grams of cannabis. That was what I had to deal with. That was my wake up call. And I was basically a pseudo activist, after that, you know, like I'd had all this trauma, but it still took a couple of years because I was still working and making money and things like that and actually developing myself. You know, I wanted to move on with my life. But then I realized that these people that I was working for didn't give a frack about me, didn't give a frack about the customers. They really didn't care in any way, shape or form. And I started to get really stressed out. I started When you're making money and you're working with and or for people you fracking hate, who you know for a fact do not give a frack about you, it's really hard to deal with. And, you know, I just couldn't handle it, really, to the point where I can no longer work for anybody ever again. It doesn't matter. Like, my friend tried to hire me to do a bit of door-to-door sales for an insulation company that he was working for. I had a panic attack the night before, okay, going into the office and starting up to earn some money. I can't do it anymore, Brandon. I've had too many bad experiences happen to me over my life to ever go back. And it's a long, arduous process that you can never ask somebody to go through. Because if you told them what the consequences are for living this lifestyle and for doing these things with their life, that most people would reject it. They would never, ever wish to have these kind of experiences. They would never wish to work 11, 12 hours a day producing radio and video in order to get a few hundred hits on each of them and that kind of thing. It's not worth it, okay? I can tell people, you know, if you're getting into this for the money or the fame or the glory or anything, it's just not worth it. If you're doing it because you have no other choice, like me, it doesn't matter whether or not it's worth it. You simply don't have a choice. I can't go back to being a slave in a slave job. I can't do it.
Yeah, you can't unknow something too. That's the big deal. You've seen this information, you've experienced it, you know what it is, and you can't go back into the matrix, to use the line from the movie. And you know, you can talk to people and sometimes you can see people who are starting to see, you know, what's behind the veil, who are starting to kind of connect with that. And you can only, the response usually, the initial intention is to throw all the information that we've acquired over years, you know, over looking at, you know, 160 documentaries or reading, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of sometimes very boring information, and just to throw all this on them at once. And then for some reason we sort of expect them to go, oh, well, this guy just told me all this stuff. It all makes sense. Now I'm going to go be an activist and change the world. But you see again the glimmers of hope in these people's eyes, and you realize you can only go so far with them because.
Well, to use another Matrix quote, I can only show you the door. You're the one who has to walk through it.
Right. You can only present the information, and if they want to go down the rabbit hole, they'll go down. But you can't drag them down the rabbit hole. You know, if we all think back about how we started coming into this awareness, we, as you mentioned, you were exposed to the information several times, and it didn't take necessarily, but eventually you had experiences and you had these situations that arose that brought you to it. So again, I guess what I'm getting at here is that. A lot of times we try to overload people when we first try to talk to them, and it doesn't ever work the way that we think that it'll work. And there comes a time, as you mentioned, with what we do once you've broken through the matrix to some degree, there comes a time where you look at someone and say, I could give you this information, but it's going to be all downhill from here. If you take this and go down the rabbit hole, life is not going to get any easier. And, you know, sometimes you think, you know, would it have been better if I never knew, you know, if I took the blue pill? But that's really not an option, and I don't regret taking the red one, to be honest.
You know, I don't feel any regret either, because I know that I'm a better man because I didn't deny the truth. I know that I'm a better man because I help people every day actually deal with the trauma that we're going through. And that's what a lot of people in this movement forget, is that knowing what we know in and of itself is a traumatic thing. And we don't try to develop coping mechanisms, I believe, as readily and as regularly as we should. And that's why my show is very much on the lighter side of genocide, where we have a good laugh and that kind of thing. Because, man, this stuff is stressful. If you can't laugh about it, if you can't, you know, enjoy what it is you're doing, it's so easy to lose your motivation. Like it's too easy, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, and that's what causes a lot of people to just give up. And you know, especially if you're isolated, if you don't have anybody else to talk with on that level. Now, we all, when we first started getting into this, searched really hard for people who were of like minds. But, and to some degree, that's a bit overrated, because you know, you can meet many people who are of like minds on this level when talking about the Matrix system and the world order system, and it still never really quite quite does it. So it's, as soon as you get on this path, it's a lonely road for sure. But it's what other road would you take? You know, so.
Well, see, and again, it's have you ever seen the movie Armageddon, where the guys, you know, the roughneck oil drillers, like, fly out to this frickin' asteroid to blow it up and what have you?
I think so. It's one with Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Well, in the start of the film, what's his name? Ben Affleck is shagging around with Bruce Willis's daughter in the film, and she's telling him, "Look, I love him," and he's like. Bruce Willis says to her, he's the only one in your age bracket, Grace. It's not a choice, it's a lack of options." And that's basically what I feel is the problem with us, is that what we're doing is not a choice at all. It really is a lack of options, because once you realize that going to work every day is actually killing your soul, killing the planet, and that if you do nothing, you're going to be exterminated, like, for real. Nothing else matters. The lack of options basically dictates your future, doesn't it? You know? I mean, name me one thing that's more important than survival. Name me one thing that's more important than living free. You don't realize how important those things are until you realize you're about to lose them. And I think that's really our motivation, is we realize that we're about to be slaves, like real slaves. And it's not a joke. And you can't argue with it, because the facts are so startling and so stark and so obvious.
Right. Or the fact that you've already lost the freedom. I mean, you think about... There's terms that are repeated over and over in the alternative media that we're losing our rights. Well, we've lost our rights a long time ago, right? Because I would challenge anybody to go out and actually live free. It wouldn't last today.
Oh, my God. You know, that reminds me of, the free man on the man movement, who, like, go into court and stuff like that, and they manage to argue successfully that they're a natural person and that they don't have to pay taxes and they don't have to buy vehicle registrations and all of this other kind of stuff, right? These guys, the most successful ones of them, are all broke. Every single one of them. They're completely broke, have to be in court all the frickin' time, have to be harassed by the authorities all the frickin' time. That's what it means to be free, to be broke, under the boot of tyranny, on a constant basis, and have to listen to boring, scrambled head douchebags in black cloaks all day long. That's freedom? I think not. And I don't think... until we're all free, that they'll be free either, okay? Freedom is a collective thing, except it's expressed in an individual light. Isn't that ironic? You don't really have much of a choice in the matter. You're either all free, everybody's got the same basic rights and freedoms, or you're all frickin' slaves. And these guys who try to come out individually and free themselves and do all those documents and all that kind of stuff, they see what happens when you try to be free on your own. You become even more enslaved than the people who are slaves together.
Right, and it's used to send a message to other people. We had the Chris Dorner situation here where the... I don't necessarily believe that it was, I would say, an inside job, but I would not believe the official story anyway, but the openness with which the LAPD went out to assassinate this man, right? They could have covered that the intentional assassination aspect up. They could have covered up the potential drone use. They could have covered that up, but it was put out all on national television for the rest of the world to see what happens when you tangle with the control system, whatever he did, right or wrong. The guys, the free men, you know, who are in court all the time, that you just mentioned, they're in court all the time. They're the most successful ones that are back and forth and in and out of court, and they're broke, but that's only because they haven't yet been sentenced to jail. That will come, inevitably, because the court eventually says, well, that's a very convincing argument there, sir. Now that's 20 years, 25 years in prison. It's a situation that we've gotten to now that we've already lost our freedom. And, the question is, what are we going to do about it? Which is why I try to focus a lot on solutions, because if there's no way out of it, if we just sit around and talk about, here's the problem, here's the new and creative way that we're being enslaved, then what good is that? Then we've just made it harder on ourselves as we go deeper into tyranny. So I think there's a major lack of solutions-based activism, too, which hopefully we can, hopefully collectively and individually we can change.
Well, also there's another element here that I wish to touch upon. Who is the one supposed to be providing the solutions? Okay, so let's just think about this. The media, I believe, it's not their job to propose solutions at all. Okay, if some guy with a microphone or a camera or something like that says, I think we should do this, I think we should do that, I think that's not the role of the media at all. The media is never supposed to provide solutions. It's actually meant to simply provide information on the problems and allow other people who have the expertise and the motivation to come up with the solutions. And the media's got to just keep covering and covering and covering so that people are more informed. And there is a lot of this discord amongst the truth/patriots/whatever-label-you-want-to-stick-on-it-community-esque thing for why aren't people proposing more solutions? Why isn't David Icke proposing more solutions and what have you? It's because they don't know. They don't have solutions. Only the people out there can really, really provide those solutions because, hey, it's not our job. People are very, very skilled at usually a couple of tasks, and that's usually it. If they're skilled at those couple of tasks, whether they're good at talking, swaggering, whatever the heck, hey, they can go be politicians, they can provide the solutions. But, it's just not something journalists I found are very, very good at, They're capable of suggesting, but they don't have the time and are probably not willing to take the effort in order to implement said solutions. Not like myself, for instance. I can give people options and perspectives and things of that nature. But hey, the problem's always been rested with the individual. And I think it's once you start relying on other people to give you your solutions and your information, that's when you've abdicated your entirety of personal responsibility, which is the only thing that actually keeps the evil at bay.
Yeah, there's also the situation, too, though, that whenever anybody does propose a solution, then immediately they get shouted down with catcalls of that. That'll never work. We can't do that. That'll never work. And that goes back to my point earlier, that when people scream, well, there's nothing we can do about it, it'll never work because you're not trying to make it work, or there's nothing you can do about it because you're busy telling me there's nothing I can do about it instead of actually doing something about it.
Exactly, and when somebody tells you you can't do something, that's simply a moron who is never going to do something telling you that you can't do something because they can't or they won't. So who do you think is the what was it that Obi-Wan said to Han Solo? Who's the fool? Who's the bigger fool? The fool or the fool who follows him? So if you're going to listen to these negative Nancy characters who have never achieved a fracking thing in their fracking life, of their pathetic slave scum slovenly existence, who's the bigger idiot? You know? I mean, look, Nikola Tesla was demonized hardcore for his inventions and things of this nature. Nelson Mandela was jailed on frickin' Robben Island and was fed bread and water for like 20 years. All of these people that have been ridiculed, persecuted, had their lives, livelihoods, and what have you destroyed are the ones who wind up making things happen, because it does not matter how much negative resistance you have. If you are somebody who has a solution and you are not willing to give it up, eventually you will be successful if your solution is in fact the right thing to do. Like there's an old saying, nothing can stop an idea whose time has come. And if you think that you've got the idea, and if you think the time has come, I would not let any negative Nancy sway you.
Well, Vinny, we've got just a minute left here on the show. Why don't you tell everybody, it's been great having you on, by the way, tell everybody again how they can find your show and find your other projects.
Well, you can check me out 5 days a week at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And also at you can find me on Facebook under Vinny Eastwood as well, and there's links through to there on the website homepage. And AmericanFreedomRadio.com, great network, has given me the platform that I've needed in order to do this radio show, to help out as many people as conceivably possible. And indeed, without them giving my radio show, I wouldn't have got a whole bunch of the equipment and all of the recording devices so that we can even do this show here today. Brandon, I thank you very much for giving me the time.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been great. And ladies and gentlemen, again, this is Truth on the Tracks. You can catch us here every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on UCY.TV. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next week.